but spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler app number 28.
This is exciting, and this is one of the ones that you guys requested, Predestination.
This is a total fan-funded episode from front to back, in the sense that it was our one of our fans down under who recommended this movie.
Yep, let us know about it.
And then several of you said, let's do a spoiler app, so guess what, bitches? Here it is.
Yes.
Predestination spoiler app. So for anybody who's new to these, we're going to be going into all of the details of this movie, Predestination, and the ending and everything. So if you don't want to hear the ending and things ruined,
and it's such a mind-bending, twisty movie, we may not be right about everything either.
I know. It's just like, we might. Maybe that was the ending. Maybe it wasn't. Okay, so let's first of all, this movie Predestination was directed by Michael Spierig and Peter Spierig. They're also just known as the Spierig brothers. They're also the two who wrote it. It stars Ethan Hawke and Sarah Snook and Noah Taylor. It's basically Ethan Hawke and Sarah Snook's film.
And it's based on a Philip K. Dick story entitled All You Zombies.
Right. No. Robert Heinlein.
Oh, sorry. Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, Robert Heinlein story, All You Zombies.
Mm-hmm.
So, we both liked it.
Yes.
A lot. So let's start with the ending.
Kind of felt like a Philip K. Dick story, though.
It did. You so want this to be.
I really
do.
You know why?
Story.
Because it had kind of like that Blade Runner kind of feel to it. But, yeah. This movie is really, really interesting in a lot of different ways. Now, one of the things that's great about it too, is it's like we were talking about in the regular episode, is that, it's one of those indie sci-fi movies with a lower budget, but big ideas, and really maximizes the resources that it has, because you have all these weird, trippy production design elements. Like you have like these briefcases that it's like this old case that moves them back and forth through time. But you also had that one case at the beginning. You're not even really sure what it did. That one suitcase that was as he was trying to stop the first bomb from going off.
Mm-hmm.
But you have Ethan Hawke as a temporal agent, and he is trying to solve a mystery that's eluded him and his bosses for a while, as there's been bombs throughout a certain period of time, and they can never quite catch the bomber.
Right.
So it pretty much unfolds from there. And then it goes in these weird directions. Like you have he's going back, and then it's set up like, okay, he kind of has a suspicion of who the bomber is.
Right.
And it starts off as like in a weird bar conversation. And it's also set up, and this is, you know, great credit to the filmmakers. That's what they want you to believe, and that's what you do believe.
Uh-huh.
And the movie just starts twisting and turning, and to the point where you're like, wait, I thought I knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Now I'm not sure.
And I want to say this, too. The twists and turns weren't like bullshit contrivances that can happen.
No, they weren't.
You know what I mean? They were very well thought out. They were very interesting. So the ending, though. The ending is basically saying that he is...
Every person in
Everyone.
That story.
He was the bomber. He was the girl. He was the girl who then got the sex change into the man.
Yes.
Who then, he's just the oldest.
And he was the baby.
And he was the baby.
Yeah.
So, which, and then the Noah Taylor, who basically is the.
Boss.
The boss. He's the head of this secret agency.
He's like, you had to do this. This is going to happen every single time. And he's pretty much saying that this is necessary for the greater good. You have to take that baby. You have to, you know, do all these things.
And then so what happens is, God, it's hard to sort of sort this out, but one of the things they put in there. And again, this is the thing about good science fiction that we love. They establish a rule.
Yes.
And they fucking stick with this thing.
Yes.
They don't bullshit around. So the rule that they state, they kind of subtly plant these rules in there, but they stick with them, which is if you jump too much, you start to lose your brain, like it makes you more aggressive or whatever. Remember that stuff?
Oh yeah. There was, and it was real subtle too. It was like basically like a physical report, and yeah, it's like you're starting to see like, basically you'll become psychotic if you right. do it enough times, because time travel, it affects you mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. And I'm on board with that. I can understand.
Great.
Yeah,
and what sounds a great thing to throw in yeah. there, of course.
So as you're being presented with all these different ideas and facts, you realize in the back of your head that the older this character gets, no matter how many different variations of this character it is going to be the most psychotic.
Right.
And
the one that was set on fire is like the most dangerous. Then that one never, I guess that one... So in the very beginning, you see Ethan Hawke get set on fire, and then he's coming out of these bandages, and his head is horribly disfigured. And that's where the doctor's reading the report saying, you've jumped far too many times. And you see the report saying, prone to anger, you know.
And that sets up the plot device where this is why you wouldn't recognize someone who looks like you, because basically he had a face graft, even though that's the same person
right.
who was a woman, then a man. And I think... I'm not sure. This is me guessing that that first bomb that was supposed to be stopped, like that was when he was not a woman but a man, and then he got burned, and then that's when he got the Ethan Hawke face after that. So, but again, I'm not sure. Like, I have to see this movie again to actually grab everything that was going on.
So you're saying, wow. So you're saying... No, I don't see. Here's okay. So what you're saying, if I understand this correctly, is the guy, the Ethan Hawke that gets burned badly,
right? Didn't have Ethan Hawke's face until he was burned.
Right. No.
Now see, that's what I'm saying.
Well, no, here, because Jesus, now I gotta go watch this movie again right now. I don't know how spoiler this is. It's gonna be two guys confused.
Yeah.
Because okay, so the beginning of the movie, we see Ethan Hawke trying to stop someone, and he gets set on fire by a guy with a ponytail, basically.
Right.
Okay. And then while he's down there, a guy walks up to him whose face we don't see, gives him this violin case.
Right. So he can escape, basically.
So he can escape, so he yeah. can get out of there. Right there, though, that's establishing that there's three versions of Ethan Hawke out there.
Yes.
There's... ponytail Ethan Hawke, which is the guy that gradually went a little nuts and became the bomber.
Okay.
The fizzle bomber.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the guy who walked up as the Ethan Hawke. We basically are following the bulk of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Ethan Hawke who's been horribly disfigured. This is the way I interpreted this.
Right.
So they show the horribly disfigured Ethan Hawke. And they're going over his report that Japanese doctor is saying, you know, and we see that he's nuts, he's done.
Right.
My impression was, well, that Ethan Hawke is just, they're not letting him out of the special hospital. Like, he's that's it. He has to stay there. And then the main Ethan Hawke that we are following is the one who's sent back there because he's listened to these, he records things and leaves them
as instructions,
basically. Right.
For his future or past self.
Right. So here's how I took it all is disfigured Ethan Hawke is done.
Mm-hmm.
The opening scene, he's done. They're like, we're not letting this guy out anymore because he's fucking
right.
He's bananas. Mm-hmm. So,
but they made it a point to say your face isn't going to look the same anymore.
Right.
So I'm thinking that's the first time he actually looks like Ethan Hawke. Like this is
no because the beginning of the movie we see him as Ethan Hawke before
yeah,
he gets set on fire.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't like the first time we met that guy was Burn Face.
Mm-hmm.
So
when does Girl with Man Face go to Ethan Hawke Face?
Ooh. She becomes, Sarah Snook.
See, there's going to be a lot of dead air in this episode because as we're trying to figure it out, I know it's, and honestly, these aren't critiques. This is what makes this movie fun.
The fact that we're having this discussion is why this is a great movie.
So this is why you have to see it. And you guys, when you watch it, you might get something completely different out of the first view. Now, we are going to watch it again to see if we can catch and get all these.
See, now I'm pissed off that I didn't buy it.
Well, you could still buy it.
For $15?
Oh, you mean you did the rental fee instead of the purchase?
The rental fee, because once you started watching it, now you have to...
You don't get an upgrade price?
I'm going to see if I do. If I get an upgrade price. In fact, as soon as we get done recording this, I'm going to do the upgrade price.
Yeah, and just keep it and watch it again.
Because I need to watch this a bunch.
Yeah.
Because I got to figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as simple. Like, I remember I was watching it last night, and I was watching it late, and my wife was watching with me, and she fell asleep on the couch. And when she woke up, she's like, well, so what happened? Did, like, Ethan Hawke, like, find the bomber? And I said, I can't even begin to tell you what happened with this film. I mean, you're going to just have to watch it again. It's not the kind of movie where you could just sum up in, like, a couple of lines. So, but she's going to watch it again tonight, so I'll probably watch it with her.
But he does, the end of the movie, he shoots ponytail bombing, fizzle bomb Ethan Hawke, kills him.
Yes.
So to me, that was like, he finally ended the cycle.
Well, this is what's great too. It's a little nebulous as whether he did or not, because, you know, crazy bomber Ethan Hawke said, you know, if you kill me, that won't end the cycle. You have to accept me to end the cycle. And he shoots him.
Right. Because bombing Ethan Hawke was older.
Yes, but also, as it showed, the most psychotic because of all the time travel jumps he made.
Right, and there's that one scene where he meets with Noah Taylor, and Noah Taylor says you did an unsupervised jump, but a...
You know, and
because that's another rule they established was you can only jump to these specific things.
Right. And then also the boss, Noah Taylor, then he also said, but, you know, it'd be nice to have an agent who's outside of the system, too. And ultimately, is that what the bomber was? He was the one that was working outside of the system, bombing and killing specific threats, even though he was killing all these innocent people at the same time.
Well, that was the interesting part is bomber Ethan Hawke says... He goes,
no, I'm doing good. I'm saving lives.
Because he goes, and this is where you're like, no way. Because he says, here's a, you know, whatever, like here's a train derailment that happens in 19, because the big bomb is 1975.
Right.
That's the one they got to get to. So he goes, there was a train derailment in 19, you know, whatever he says in 1983, where, you know, 600 people died that ended up not dying because I killed the train conductor or whatever, the
chemical truck driver.
Yeah, that's right. There was a chemical truck accident in 1983. Right. He goes, but I killed him in 1970. So
he was never driving that truck.
He was never driving that truck. So it never happened. So he's like, yeah, I killed a handful of people in the 60s and 70s, but I've saved so much more. And you're like, well, that's crazy. But that's the kind of thing where Noah Taylor's character would go, yep. We need this.
Right.
We need this to happen because he was sort of the smoking man type guy behind the scenes who wouldn't really reveal everything that
the whole plan,
the shady organization,
the secret society. Like, I like too how they always kind of avoided the question of like, well, are you CIA? Are you a cop? I'm a temporal agent. Like, it was never really established that. Are you law enforcement? What exactly are you?
Right.
Like, well, I'm a temporal agent, but what is that? What does that mean? What are you doing specifically?
It was so shifty.
Like and it was like, I don't know if, are they supposed to be cops? I don't know if they're supposed to be cops. I don't know if they're even supposed to be in that government system of like cops, CIA, FBI, law enforcement.
Let's step back for a second since we can't quite solve. let's step back and like just talk about it as a movie, mm-hmm. and get into the specifics of the movie, which I loved the scene design. I love how Space Corp was like out of Catch Me If You Can. It was like early 60s, mm-hmm. you know, space. They looked like they were, you know, interviewing to be flight attendants on Pan Am. You
and know? The attitude towards women, right. too, which was really, it was specific to the time. It was like a Mad Men kind of thing in the 60s. And also, then it's revealed, too, like, well, are they being trained for basically, quote, companions in space for the astronauts, or are they full-fledged astronauts themselves? Or, and then you find out too, well, no, it's also kind of a front to recruit for this shadowy organization.
Well, so, because it starts out like, oh, you had to be a virgin and you were going to go keep astronauts
company.
Company. You
yeah,
know, you're
going to
basically just like, and eventually marry an astronaut, you
yes.
know? And so, and all of the testing they had to do. And so, Sarah Snook, is a young woman who is born with, you know, she's, her tests are off the chart. She's very,
right.
she's very intelligent.
And she has both male and female parts inside.
So crazy. And then she has, she's specially gifted. So Noah Taylor is basically like going, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. She's the special gifted one. And the whole time Sarah Snook is telling this story, in this bar in New York in the 70s, and clearly she's had a sex change.
Yes.
The minute you see her, you're like, oh, there's Sarah Snook trying to be look like a man.
But the interesting thing, too, about the story was with these science fiction conventions, it wasn't a voluntary sex change. It was like she needed this to kind of save her life. Like with after complications with the pregnancy, we had to take these parts out, and these are the parts that are working. But don't worry, we'll finish it up and get you all the way there.
Right.
Like, but, and she's looking at like, well, did I don't have a say in this at all? It's, I can't stay. And, it was an interesting sci-fi convention because you always think of science fiction as advanced, especially in the medical field, mm-hmm. like this type of problem with a complicated pregnancy or even finding, you know, two sets of organs inside someone. Well, that could be easily fixed. Just pick what you want to be. But no, not in this story. The story was, this is what has to happen to save your life. You can't be a woman anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another just interesting
and
twist to the story.
And used so effectively. Like when these things, as we talk about so often, when they're not used effectively, it's like, what the hell is this stupid rule? You're genius.
Yeah, yeah. It's forced.
It was not forced at all. And the other thing too, I like,
these are based on classic science fiction stories from classic science fiction writers
yeah.
who knew what they were doing.
And so, the thing that was also what was interesting is, so the set design, the wardrobe was really cool. The period piece wardrobe, basically the period,
multiple pieces.
You had the '60s, you had the early '60s,
mm-hmm.
you had a little bit, a quick couple scene in the '40s,
some '70s,
and mostly a lot of '70s. Mm-hmm. And then you also had sort of
some sci-fi production
80,
design.
Yeah, future, whatever that was.
And it was also, it's very, also very calculated. It was a very sterile science fiction design.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still, it almost reminded me of Brazil a little bit, like the way the offices were set up for the science fiction offices. But also what I like, too, is even like when they're bringing out the equipment for like, when they're in the sci-fi offices, clearly it's the future. Everything is dressed down. You know that these are highly advanced pieces of science fiction,
yeah.
you know, technology, but it's, you know, it's an old case or it's
a
briefcase.
I love that. The recorder, yeah. the violin yeah. case, the guns were older.
The guns were older, yeah, to match the times that they were going in.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, too, it goes back to that episode, a couple episodes we did with Jim Bruce, where he said, you know, constraints are good.
Yeah.
And I feel like this movie, which...
Well, I want to read the story now.
Well, you got to read the story.
Yeah.
And then the... I want to go back to... Where is it? Where's the budget? I can't find the budget on this. Yeah, there's no budget on IMDb. Details, company credits, specs. Anyway.
Well, it's probably... Yeah, I wonder if it's... Yeah, Australian knows? Budget too. Yeah,
who knows what the budget is? But my point
and
is,
you know who funded it? It was the again Australian government, yeah. The Australian
Screen Australia.
Yeah, they funded it, which is great. I think you know, and this is the type of film you wonder, like, would some kind of studio or would an investor have invested in this? Would we have this movie if it wasn't for countries investing in their own filmmakers?
It's great, and what the point I want to make though about what Jim Bruce said is constraints, you know, breed creativity. Because they didn't have big
$100 million
sci-fi budget,
yeah.
They had to do these really creative things. And they had to, like, just the way they depicted the actual act of time travel. Things would kind of right. vibrate and the wind right. would blow and a light would blow.
It's like when the Flash runs by yeah. on TV.
And it was yeah. like, boom, and they did yeah. it really quickly. And it was believable. It was mm-hmm. effective.
Even when they showed the devastation of New York and that big bombing, what did they show?
A photo.
Stills.
Still.
So, I mean, in the hands of, like, you know, a big Hollywood production, you would actually see yeah. the entire people screaming and running, and it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. You don't need to see that. That's not what the story's about.
They just had a wall of news clippings of all of the things the Fizzle Bomber had been doing.
Right.
And so that was really cool. And then the one-on-one dialogue scenes between Sarah Snook and Ethan Hawke that take place in the bar, which is a big chunk of the movie where she's yeah, sort of recounting great. her mm-hmm. history and how she got to that place. Really, the way they lit it, the way they shot it.
Right.
They made each time period, I felt like I'm in a bar in Manhattan in the right. 70s. You know, I felt like mm-hmm. I was in the bright 60s and all that other stuff. And I just yep. liked the way it looked.
Well, I think we're going to take a break right now, and we have a sponsor for this Ooh. Episode. Yes, a new sponsor. And we're really excited because this is an across-the-board, all-things comedy sponsor, and they're supporting all the podcasts right now as they are at South by Southwest. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sattva Mattresses. And here's the thing about this company is they're an online-only mattress seller. And they do luxury mattresses, and they design, manufacture, and install all across America. They have really great ratings on Google. They're like a Forbes top 100 company to watch. Now, they have no physical retail stores, so they can offer these premium quality mattresses at a fraction of the cost. Now, they're doing a new company right now called Lumen Leaf. And they're premiering it right now at South by Southwest. So if you're actually at South by Southwest, go down there. They're teaming up with A&E and Bates Motel. And you can stop by and enter your name for a chance to stay the night at the Bates Motel. I don't know if that's for everyone during South by Southwest. And a chance to win a Lumen Leaf mattress, which is really cool.
Now, they do memory foam, right?
Yeah, Lumen Leaf is their memory foam brand. It's actually loomandleaf.com, loomandleaf.com. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention is, and because I went to the website to check it out, and I'm like, you know, I don't know if I want to buy a mattress online. Right. I'm not able to lay on it and mm-hmm. feel it. And I mean, this is kind of like a big deal. You know, I'm going to be laying on this for a long time. I need to be able to see what it's like. So what they do to take that fear away is everything comes with a guarantee. You can try the mattress, Lumen Leaf, for 75 days.
That's
more than 2 months. Yeah, you'll know if you like a mattress or not.
If you can't figure out your mattress in 75 yeah. days, that's a pretty...
You should sleep on the floor. Really.
<That's>, like Tom Hanks in Castaway, right? When he comes back and he can't sleep on the bed.
Yeah, so sleep under the bed. That's what you could do.
There you go.
Buy a bed and sleep under it.
Now, these are $4,000 mattresses that yes. you're getting. This is a
for like a fraction of the price.
For half the price. Mm-hmm. They're Tempur-Pedic, and they're also made for the it's a plant-based foam that's sourced in the U.S., and there's it has a proprietary cooling gel that is designed to expel the heat and
organic cotton.
Organic cotton, and along with the plant-based foam, it's which is a healthier memory foam that keeps you cool all night. Now, yeah.
Which is great because we both get night sweats because we're so anxious about everything all the time.
we're both temporal agents.
Yeah, yeah. So it's great to have a mattress that's a little cooler.
And the other thing, I'm telling you this right now. I'm due for a new mattress. And when I've never had memory foam, but on occasion I stay in hotels that have memory foam.
Right.
I love it. I'm going to get almost positive my new mattress is going to be a memory foam mattress. Ah. So I think this is a good deal, and I have been pricing them out, and
this is way cheaper.
This is a better deal.
So check them out. They're also on Twitter at Lumen Leaf, and also, but like, this is the important thing. Just check them out. If you're like, want to actually try them, they're premiering this entirely new brand, Lumen Leaf, at South by Southwest, like literally right now. Like,
Vanessa, we know you live there.
Yes, go check
this
out. And try to win a night at the Bates Motel. So Lumen Leaf, that's LOMANDLEAF.com.
Boom, guys.
Glad to have you guys on board.
Thank you, memory phone.
So let's go back in time and sleep on a comfortable mattress.
I needed a break.
The brain bending.
My brain needed a break to think about this. Well, I mean, the other thing too, the way it's shot, the lighting,
the cinematography is great too.
I said this on the regular episode. I got it in HD and turned the lights off in my place and really watched it in the most cinematic way I could at home.
Right.
Because I wish I could have seen this on the big screen, but man, if you got a nice flat screen. This is the kind of film where, like,
I don't know if anyone in this country was able to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, probably not. But watch it. Turn the lights off. Turn the phone off. Like, this isn't like a thing you kind of, you know.
You can't zone in and out of this
no
film.
No way. You have to pay full attention.
Every scene. I mean, and that's the other mark of a truly great and tightly put together film. One of the rules in screenwriting and also in editing too is make your movie so you can't take one scene out without the audience getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have scenes where you could take out of your script or of your film and it makes no difference on the film, those scenes don't belong in the film.
Right.
Now, this is a great example of this film needed every single scene. You know, there's no extraneous scenes. Everything moves the story or the plot along. Now, granted, some of it moved a little slowly, but you don't care. You don't care because
so intriguing.
The story unfolds properly, and every time something is answered, another mystery unfolds, and it just keeps going and going until the end, when you're just like, "Oh my God, is that what's going on?"
And the thing is, like, the other thing too, watch this for Sarah Snook, because she's really has been kind of, you know, done TV, and you know, she was in Sleeping Beauty, which is nice. But this, Ethan Hawke is great, but this, man, she does.
Yeah, I got a lot of Sarah Snook the last couple days.
She does a lot of movie, man. She does. I mean, she does a lot of solid acting in this film.
Yes.
She's really a solid actress, and you know, she's from Adelaide, South Australia, where I've performed at the Rhino Room. So. Mm-hmm.
She was a local hire.
She got her at a day rate. Yeah. And honestly, guys, really want to know what your interpretation of this film is.
Let's light up the message boards on CFN, because we really want to see what your guys' theories are, what you think may or may not have been happening, and extrapolate a little bit. Do you think him shooting old Ethan Hawke, did that break the cycle, or didn't it? Or did it make the cycle continue?
I think he broke the cycle.
So you think old Ethan Hawke was lying?
Oh, yeah, because he was a psycho.
Okay.
Because they established he was nuts.
Right, exactly.
And I think he broke the cycle. I think Noah Taylor's character knew this was going to happen and needed old crazy, bomby Ethan Hawke to do just enough damage, and then it was time for him to get taken out. Like, that was my guess.
Interesting. Okay.
And that's why he was finally, that scene where he's like, oh, you did an illegal jump, but they're not all bad. Like,
I think crazy Ethan Hawke was the agent outside of the temporal agency, but he went nuts. And also, I think younger Ethan Hawke, possibly after being burned, depending on our
theories.
They're
different guys, though. Yeah. Because in the opening scene, there are three different Ethan Hawkes. Right?
I know. I got to watch it again. but I think he fed right into the cycle. I think the cycle continued. And I also think that there was no way to break the cycle. That's my theory. Because they make hints of like,
and the
some
title
things,
of the movie?
Yeah, Predestination and the title of the movie. Like, you know, you're right. There's some things are predestined. Like, I think he was incapable of breaking the cycle. So that, what do you guys think?
God, we want to know. And this is something that, yeah. And if any of you guys come to any live shows and want to have this discussion,
we'd love to. Yeah,
I want to know what you guys think.
Yeah, we'll find an all night diner or a bar or whatever. We'll hash it out. Yeah, we want to hear what you think.
And I'm gonna hopefully we'll have seen it several more times. I have to watch this movie numerous times now.
Yes.
At least once more. But so great.
You know, these movies deserve your attention. These smaller, especially really interesting films. Like, you know what this reminded me of, too? Like a lower budget Inception kind of movie where you have, like, Christopher Nolan gets to make the movie he wants, but he's got a giant budget that he can work with, where these guys don't have a giant budget to work with, but they still got to do what they wanted. They made the movie they wanted to make. They put it together the way they wanted to make it. They just had the budget constraints that Christopher Nolan doesn't have. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really a great movie. I'm glad it exists. This is the kind of discoveries that we make watching films that, you know, I wish there were more of.
This is one of the things I love about this podcast is that a 17-year-old fan, Sean Coates in Australia, found this movie, emailed it to us, and we both watched it and are now talking about it.
Yes.
Like, literally, this is the global reach of the Kit and Han Army, that you guys do this stuff for us. It's so awesome. Sean, thank you again, man. We will be coming to Australia with earbuds, and hopefully we'll meet you.
yeah, doing some screenings out there.
Unless maybe he's a temporal agent.
We've already met him.
Maybe he's one of us.
Yeah.
at 17, that is now Australian. So this was so cool. And this is not the last time we're going to talk about this movie.
No, we'll be talking about it again, because I know after you guys start posting stuff on the message boards, we'll read some of it on the next episode, because we want to basically keep this discussion going. We want to keep going with this film.
Yeah, and love to get either of these guys, these directors, these brothers on the show.
Oh, that'd be great.
If we could get any of the people involved.
Just in one of them, though. I don't want both.
I don't want both. Yeah. They're both a little yappy. I can't say enough. This is like everything that's great about filmmaking, and this podcast is great. So thank you guys so much. And of course, Lumen Leaf.
Yes.
Lumenleaf.com. Get your plant-based memory foam.
And go see them at South by Southwest. We know some of you were there.
We know it. We know you're there.
And go say hi to Tom Merritt. He's there too.
Hey, Tommy Merritt. So thanks again, everybody, for making cool shows like this happen. Any ideas about any new movies and stuff like that?
Let us know.
Let us know.
Info@comedyfilmnerds.com.
Thank you so much. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. As always, remember,
Han shot first. Or did he?